headlines. The Palestinian Red Crescent says Israeli forces' attack on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound has left more than 200 worshippers injured, with many being hit in the head and in the eyes. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says there is no logic more flawed and perverse than the Western-promoted rationale for the creation of the Israeli regime. And India hits a record daily death toll of nearly 4,200 coronavirus fatalities and reports more than 400,000 cases for the third consecutive day. Thanks for joining us. The lead story, over 200 Palestinians are injured after Israeli forces attack worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem Al-Quds. The Palestinian Red Crescent says many of the wounded were hit in the head and eyes by rubber bullets. An unspecified number of Palestinians were also arrested while Israeli troops tried to prevent other worshippers from entering the holy site. Six Israeli soldiers were also hurt as Palestinians fought back, hurling stones and other objects at the troopers. Israel has tightened restrictions on Palestinian worshippers in the Al-Quds since the start of the holy month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured in the regime's crackdown on demonstrators protesting the curbs. Correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier to give more details about the clashes at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds.
Following the Friday prayers, there was a protest against the Israeli occupation and in order to demonstrate the forced eviction of Palestinian families living in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Jerusalem Al-Quds, the soldiers attacked them. And following the Maghrib prayers, the clashes renewed when Palestinian worshippers wanted to stay at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They were chanting anti-Israel slogans. The forces also raided the complex of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the clashes continued for late hours.
The Palestinian president has demanded an emergency session of the UN Security Council on Israeli violence against Palestinians in occupied Jerusalem outlets. Mahmoud Abbas expressed full support for protesters at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, calling them heroes. He warned that Israel is fully responsible for the situation and the consequences if things escalate further. He also slammed Israeli settlers' quote brutality and terrorism in East Jerusalem outlets, which has led to clashes with Palestinians since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan. Meanwhile, Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh warned Israel of the consequences over what he called the regime's aggression at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Iran and Turkey have also condemned Israeli attacks on worshippers at Al-Aqsa. Tehran has called for immediate international action to stop what it called violation of the most basic human rights. Palestinians have slammed social media companies for shutting down their personal accounts and censoring contents about Israeli attacks against Palestinian people. Social media platforms have been criticized for censoring videos, images, and news about assaults by Israeli forces and settlers on residents and activists in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. Palestinians say this is a sequel to wider systematic censorship and discrimination targeting mainly those who are marginalized and oppressed by oppressive regimes. An Israeli court has ruled that over a dozen Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah must leave their homes despite having lived there for generations. Palestinians see the move as part of Israel's land grab policy to expand its settlements and change the demographic character of Jerusalem Al-Quds. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Israel is in decline, and the desperate efforts of his allies, especially the U.S., will not stop this trend. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei stressed that Israel terrorizes not just the Palestinians, but the whole Muslim world.
In a speech marking International Quds Day, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution underscored the enduring significance of the Palestinian cause, saying it remains the most important and vivid issue for the whole Muslim world. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the oppressive and cruel capitalist system has driven a nation out of their homes and denied them their ancestral land and instead installed a terrorist regime and housed foreign people there. The leader said there is no logic more flawed and perverse than the Western-promoted rationale for the creation of the Israeli regime. Ayatollah Khamenei said since the first day of its creation, the Israeli regime has turned the occupied Palestinian territories into a terrorist base, and so it behoves every Muslim to counter the scourge. Ayatollah Khamenei said despite the desperate efforts of Israel and its patrons, particularly the U.S., the downward spiral of the Israeli regime is already in motion. The leader said Muslim nations must rally around the Palestinian cause of liberation from Israeli occupation and aggression. He cited two significant factors which determine the future. First and foremost, Ayatollah Khamenei said, is to continue resistance inside Palestinian territories and reinforce the trend of struggles and martyrdom. Second, he noted, is the support by Muslim governments and nations around the world for those fighting for the cause of Palestine. Ayatollah Khamenei concluded by highlighting a widely accepted democratic and progressive initiative to settle the issue of Palestine. A referendum with the participation of bona fide inhabitants of Palestine, regardless of their ethnicity and religion. However, the leader warned that Palestinians should not give up their legitimate and moral fight against the occupying Israeli regime until it's forced to give in to this demand.
People in the British capital, London, have marked the International Blitz Day in a car convoy that drove around the city's famous monuments, Zafar Kabayo reports.
International Al-Quds Day is marked on the last Friday of Ramadan, with Muslims and activists from around the world using the occasion to draw attention to Israeli crimes against the occupied people of Palestine. However, this year, the organisers have decided to do things a little differently.
This year, we decided that although we had the permission to do a demonstration, but we don't want to risk the well-being of our community. People coming in buses, if one is ill, everybody else gets ill. So we actually gone for this option. You know, we've got all these buses open top. We're going to be gathering with our friends from the Jewish community, from Christian community and all others. There are these trucks. Also, there are something between 50 to 100 cars with flags on it. We're going to go right the way through London.
In the UK, the commemorations are taking place at a time when UK-Palestine relations are at an all-time low, after British Prime Minister Boris Johnson declared his opposition to the International Criminal Court investigation into Israeli war crimes. However, Johnson's comments did not reflect the sentiments expressed on the streets of London.
One does not have to be Jewish to realize that what the Zionists are doing, what the state Israel is doing, is not nothing to do with Judaism.
Five double-decker buses, two trucks, and over 60 cars are here for Al-Quds Day to drive through London and show their support for the Palestinian cause, illustrating that despite the UK government's unwavering support for Israel, many Brits from all different backgrounds are still on the side of the oppressed.
We are not going to be silenced, and Palestinians are not going to be forgotten. That is the message that we're giving to those who support war crime, those who support stealing lands of the Palestinians. And the fact is that this is an event that you see Muslims, Jews, Christians, and people of all faith and none coming together under one banner, standing for justice for Palestinians.
The Israeli lobbies have attempted for years to shut down the Al-Quds Day commemorations, with Conservative London mayoral candidate Sean Bailey campaigning to stop the annual event if he's elected. Yet what this year's supporters of Palestine have shown is that the voice of those willing to stand up for the Palestinians cannot be silenced. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
The U.S. says sanctions on Iran could only be lifted if Tehran returns to compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal, also known as the JCPOA. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that there has been some progress in the JCPOA revival talks between Iran and the world powers. Psaki said it is a good sign that negotiations are continuing. Meanwhile, Tehran insists that the U.S. first needs to remove all sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled following Washington's withdrawal from the JCPOA. Iran says that it will only return to compliance after the effective removal of the sanctions is verified by the Islamic Republic.
The remaining signatories of the Iran nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, meet again in Vienna after a week-long break. Iranian lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, says all sides are serious in their attempts to find a solution and revive the agreement. A major sticking point has been the list of sanctions that need to be removed by the U.S., which withdrew from the deal under the Trump administration in 2018.
The news we are getting from the Americans indicates that they are also serious about returning to the deal. Up until now, they have announced their readiness to lift a big portion of the sanctions. However, in our view, those are still not all of the sanctions that need to be removed, so negotiations will continue until all our demands are met.
Araghchi says there are still serious differences that need to be negotiated. Iran has made it clear it will only return to full compliance after the U.S. lifts all sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled following Washington's withdrawal, and that it would only do so after it has verified their effective removal. The U.S. team led by Special Envoy Rob Malley has been engaged in talks with the European, Russian, and Chinese delegations in Vienna over the past weeks, but there have been no direct talks with Iran. While expert groups restart work on a draft agreement, Russian envoy Mikhail Ulyanov says delegations seem to be ready to stay in Vienna as long as necessary to achieve their goal. Iran's lead delegate says the Vienna talks are not tied to the Islamic Republic's upcoming presidential elections, and that the top priority for his team is to protect the definitive positions expressed by the country's top officials. Homolesky, Vienna.
India has hit a record death toll, registering nearly 4,200 coronavirus fatalities in a single day. The new deaths over the past 24 hours has pushed India's overall toll just under 240,000 since the start of the pandemic. Daily infection cases have also risen by more than 400,000. The figure has brought the country's caseload to nearly 21.9 million. A second COVID-19 wave has swept India, making it fertile ground for the virus to rapidly mutate. India's highly infectious COVID-19 variant has already spread to other countries. In the past week, it has reported an extra 1.5 million new infections and record daily death tolls. The country currently has 3.6 million active cases. Indian-controlled Kashmir is witnessing a surge in coronavirus cases as the region's healthcare system comes under increased pressure. Charity groups have come forward to lend a helping hand to the needy. Said Ali Safi has more.
As COVID-19 cases continue to surge in Indian-administered Kashmir, Mohammad Afaq Saeed has been swamped with distress calls from people looking for oxygen. Afaq leads the oxygen campaign of a Srinagar-based NGO. His small team of dedicated volunteers is working round the clock to help COVID patients gasping for breath.
We have one of the biggest oxygen programs in this region, in Kashmir. We have a lot of oxygen cylinders, a lot of oxygen concentrators, then non-invasive ventilation machines, and other supportive equipment. So this way, a lot of pressure from hospitals has been released.
With the Himalayan region's healthcare system reeling under tremendous pressure, Good Samaritans and social organizations have come forward to extend helping hand to people in need. Athrod Kashmir, a prominent philanthropic organization based out of Kashmir's summer capital, has converted the region's Hajj House into a spacious 100-bed COVID center. The facility aims to cater to the rising number of COVID patients requiring hospitalization.
We have established this facility in collaboration with state administration. The facility has 28 beds with high-flow oxygen capacity and 72 beds with oxygen supply. We will add 100 more beds here with oxygen support system very soon.
As hospitals are scrambling to shore up oxygen supplies, the authorities have decided to install over 30 new oxygen generating plants in the region. Also, the government is constructing a 500-bedded COVID hospital in central Kashmir's Budgam district.
The work on this project is to be completed within 35 to 40 days. The hospital will have 125 beds as intensive care unit, and rest of the beds will have oxygen supply system.
Meanwhile, COVID cases continue to pile up in Kashmir, with almost 5,000 cases and 50-plus deaths being reported on a daily basis. Authorities have already extended the lockdown in the region.
As second wave of COVID-19 pandemic continues to take toll on healthcare system here, experts believe the worst is still ahead. Amid the unprecedented surge of the infections, Good Samaritans are lending a helping hand to the needy, even as fear and anxiety loom large. Said Ali Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Brazil has recorded more than 78,000 new daily coronavirus infections, pushing the country's total caseload to over 15 million. Brazil's health ministry also reported more than 2,000 fatalities in the past 24 hours, raising the overall death toll to over 419,000. Brazil is facing a new wave of infections, which has resulted in a spike in the number of hospitalizations and deaths. Brazilian lawmakers have already launched an investigation into President Jair Bolsonaro's handling of the coronavirus crisis. Brazil is Latin America's worst affected country and has the second highest death toll in the world after the U.S. The U.S. president says his country, quote, still digging out of an economic collapse after an April jobs report that fell far short of expectations.
We're still digging out of an economic collapse that cost us 22 million jobs. Let me say that again. It cost us 22 million jobs. When we came in, we inherited a year of profound economic crisis and mismanagement on the virus. This morning, we learned that our economy created 266,000 jobs in April. It hadn't been adjusted again yet, but that's what it says, 266.
Joe Biden said millions of Americans who continue to suffer are in need of help. Biden noted that the United States still has a long way to go to recover from the coronavirus pandemic. The April jobs report showed the U.S. economy created just 266,000 jobs last month and saw unemployment rise to over 6%. That is while economists had expected a million jobs to be added. Republicans blamed the Biden administration's policies for the weak results. And that does it for World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. French President Emmanuel Macron has echoed the German government's concerns over President Joe Biden's proposed suspension of intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines, as he urges the United States and Britain to instead start exporting doses around the world. Arriving at a European Union summit in Porto in Portugal, the French President Emmanuel Macron expressed his reservations about the White House proposal to waive patents and criticized the lack of exports coming from Anglo-Saxon countries. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Luke Harding. The piece is titled, Macron Voices Concerns Over COVID Vaccine Patent Waiver. French President Emmanuel Macron has echoed the German government's concerns over Joe Biden's proposed suspension of intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines as he urges the United States and Britain to instead start exporting doses of vaccine around the world. Arriving at the European Union summit in Porto in Portugal, the French President Emmanuel Macron expressed his reservations about the White House proposal to waive patents and criticized the lack of exports coming from Anglo-Saxon countries. "What is the current issue?" Macron asked. "It is not really about intellectual property rights. Can you give intellectual property to laboratories who do not know how to produce and will not produce tomorrow? The main issue for solidarity is the distribution of doses. Today, the Anglo-Saxons block many of these ingredients and vaccines," Macron said. "Today, 100% of the vaccines produced in the United States are for the American market." Neither Britain nor the United States has a formal export ban, but Washington has deployed the Defense Production Act to force manufacturers to fulfill domestic contracts ahead of other orders, whilst the British government's contract with AstraZeneca also prioritizes United Kingdom requirements. A waiver on vaccine patents would allow pharmaceutical companies to make copyright vaccines without fear of legal action by manufacturers such as Pfizer and AstraZeneca. The proposal was aired by Joe Biden's trade representative and advisor, Katherine Tai, on Wednesday. Her claim that the extraordinary circumstances of the COVID-19 pandemic call for extraordinary measures forced a public statement from the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, in which von der Leyen said she was open to discussing the issue. Speaking in Porto, Portugal, Ursula von der Leyen took a bullish approach in a sign of the frustration felt at the US approach. She said, "We should be open to this discussion, but when we lead this discussion, there needs to be a 360-degree view on it, as we need vaccines now for the world. In the short and the medium term, the intellectual property waiver will not solve the problem, will not bring a single dose of vaccine in the short and medium term." Von der Leyen added, "We invite all those who engage in the debate of waivers of intellectual property rights also to join us to commit to export a large share of vaccines being produced in that region." But within the European Commission, which had only been informed shortly before the announcement of Joe Biden's proposal, and among the European Union's 27 member states, there are serious reservations. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel had already rejected the US idea, warning that production capacities and the high quality standards, not the patents, is the problem facing the world, and that a waiver would have serious implications. "The protection of intellectual property rights is a source of innovation, and it must remain so in the future," Angela Merkel said on Thursday. BioNTech, a German company, owns a patent on a vaccine jointly developed with the US company Pfizer, which uses the latest mRNA technology. On Friday, the Canadian government said it was also willing to discuss the idea, but emphasized the need to foster entrepreneurial innovation. Canada has actively worked with partners to identify barriers to vaccine access, many of which are unrelated to intellectual property rights, such as supply chain constraints, Canada's Trade Minister Mary Negg said. "Our government firmly believes in the importance of protecting intellectual property and recognizes the integral role that the industry has played in innovating to develop and deliver life-saving COVID-19 vaccines." European Union officials meanwhile said they had not yet seen the details of Joe Biden's proposal, but there was no proof on the table that the vaccine patents held by the manufacturers had been restricting supply around the world. The newly appointed Director General of the World Trade Organization, WTO, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, a Nigerian economist, echoed the sentiment on Friday, adding that while Africa was importing 99% of its vaccines, patents may not be the critical issue. She said the World Trade Organization WTO was aiming for a pragmatic solution that assures access to developing countries to deal with vaccine inequity, while at the same time making sure we don't disincentivize research and innovation. There is growing frustration in Brussels and European capitals that the United States is seeking to take the high ground, given that the European Union-based manufacturers have exported 200 million of the doses of the vaccines, whilst the White House has put a block on vaccines leaving its shores. I would be delighted if the United States shows the same willingness to export vaccines that we in Germany do, Germany's Health Minister Jens Spahn said on Friday. EU leaders are expected to discuss their position on a patent waiver at the weekend summit in Porto, Portugal, with the 27 member states divided on the best way to proceed. A qualified majority will have to be found for a position which the Commission will take into negotiations with the United States and other members of the World Trade Organization. We have not been given a single example where capacity has been restricted because of the protection of patent or other intellectual property rights, one EU official was quoted as saying. If that was the case, we already have the instruments that will allow us to react to that question. Officials said the alternative would be for members of the World Trade Organization to apply for compulsory licenses, where a government permits a local manufacturer to produce a product or process without the consent of the patent owner for domestic consumption. Alternatively, a government could apply for compulsory license to export to a country that lacks the manufacturing facilities to provide for its domestic market. The urgency now is what is the best pragmatic solution to use manufacturing capacity and produce as many vaccines as possible in the short term, the EU official was quoted as saying.
The debate.
People in many parts of the world have marked International Quds Day. The annual occasion, which is held in solidarity with Palestinians, seeks to shed light on their suffering under decades of Israeli occupation. The occupation of Palestine is probably the longest-running violation of international law and systematic violation of human rights. In a speech marking Quds Day, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, underscored the enduring significance of the Palestinian cause. On tonight's debate, we'll discuss this issue.
In a speech marking International Quds Day, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution underscored the enduring significance of the Palestinian cause, saying it remains the most important and vivid issue for the whole Muslim world. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the oppressive and cruel capitalist system has driven a nation out of their homes and denied them their ancestral land and instead installed a terrorist regime and housed foreign people there. The leader said there is no logic more flawed and perverse than the Western-promoted rationale for the creation of the Israeli regime. Ayatollah Khamenei said since the first day of its creation, the Israeli regime has turned the occupied Palestinian territories into a terrorist base, and so it behooves every Muslim to counter the scourge. Ayatollah Khamenei said despite the desperate efforts of Israel and its patrons, particularly the U.S., the downward spiral of the Israeli regime is already in motion and will not stop. The leader said Muslim nations must rally around the Palestinian cause of liberation from Israeli occupation and aggression. He cited two significant factors which determine the future. First and foremost, Ayatollah Khamenei said, is to continue resistance inside Palestinian territories and reinforce the trend of struggles and martyrdom. Second, he noted, is the support by Muslim governments and nations around the world for those fighting for the cause of Palestine. Ayatollah Khamenei concluded by highlighting a widely accepted democratic and progressive initiative to settle the issue of Palestine. A referendum with the participation of bona fide inhabitants of Palestine, regardless of their ethnicity and religion. However, the leader warned that Palestinians should not give up their legitimate and moral fight against the occupying Israeli regime until it's forced to give in to this demand.
Well, joining us on today, we have Sheikh Mahdi Todd, founder of the Al-Gharm Seminary, joining us from Mashhad. Also, we have head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masood Shajad, who's joining us on the line, if I'm correct, from the British capital. London, let's start off with Sheikh Taib. Sir, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, says the Israeli regime is on a downward spiral, and also Palestine, it remains the most important issue for the entire Muslim world. Please elaborate on the comments by Iran's leader for us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's good to be with you guys again from the holy shrine of Imam Rida in Mashhad. It's important for us to know the reality of the regime of Israel today, how it has started and how it grew and how it reached this level that we see today. Israel has reached the weakest stage that it has experienced the last 60 or 70 years. The Palestinians who've been fighting with Israel throughout the existence of Israel after they established that occupied system, oppressor regime, Palestinians were fighting with Israel using stones and just going to streets and shouting against them. But today you see that Palestinians are shooting missiles against Israel, and they're still not showing their full capacity and power. Today, the countries around Palestine and the people of this region and the people of the world have become more and more aware about the reality of this corrupt and oppressor regime. So on one side, what we have is the people of the world and the people of the region and the people of Palestine and Palestinians themselves being more aware of the reality of this regime. And on one side, the weakness and the corruption of the system and of this regime within itself that's collapsing and falling apart in of itself by different groups fighting with one another. What the Israelis are trying to do is to hide the reality of the division that's taking place between different groups and parties in Israel. That's another factor. So on one side, we have Palestinians who have become more and more powerful. On one side, we have the people of this region, the people of the world, who've become more aware of the reality of this oppressor regime. And from the other side, what we have is the weakness of Israel in its system. So when we combine these two factors together, we see that Israel is going down, and we will see the downfall of Israel soon, inshallah.
Mr. Shajadeh, over in London, International Quds Day, it provides an opportunity for people around the world to express support for the Palestinian cause. How important is a day like this to raise awareness about the Palestinians and their stance against the Israelis and the ongoing illegal military occupation in Palestine?
extremely important. I mean, the fact is this, that unfortunately, there is an illusion that has been created by the Zionists because they have extreme sort of control and influence on the international media, and indeed even on the politicians. So what illusion they have created is that they are the only democracy in the region. They are civilized, and indeed Palestinians are barbaric. But I think this illusion is fading away. The reality is that more and more people are waking to the reality of the brutality of the apartheid system. And, you know, we are getting organizations like the Human Rights Watch identifying Israel as apartheid state. And their influence is only present in the elite and the government. Ordinary people are really awakening to this. I mean, right now, I'm coming back from a car and open bus double-decker rally in London. We went all around London. And you should have seen the responses of ordinary people in the street. They were so supportive that it was amazing. And this is really what is happening, not just in the streets of London, but it's happening in the United States. It's happening around the rest of the world. And despite the fact that they have managed to get some dictators in Middle East to be supportive of them, the reality is that ordinary people are waking up and becoming more and more supportive of Palestinians. And there is a recognition. You know, every poll that has been taken in the recent years, asking people which country is the greatest threat to humanity. And always, Israel has been identified as the number one. So really, I think this is very important. But I think at the same time, it's important to recognize that they are trying to normalize themselves. They're trying to use normalization, not in among the government run by the tyrants and the dictators, but also they're trying to present themselves as a respectable religious group. And the fact of the matter is, overwhelming Orthodox Jews reject Zionism as something which nothing to do with Judaism. And I think what we need to do is apartheid system and ideology as they are.
Sheikh Taib in Mashhad, Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that opposing the Israeli regime is tantamount to opposing oppression and terrorism, which should be a collective responsibility for everyone. Unpack that statement for us.
What we see in Palestine is a clear crime taking place every day, an injustice and oppression every day. The existence of this regime is injustice in and of itself. A number of rich people gathering from different European countries and going to a country and buying some lands and then forcing others to obey them through the power of their money and guns, and then killing them every day on a daily basis. So this existence is a form of occupation, and this occupation is injustice and in and of itself. And this injustice is growing day by day. They're getting more and more aggressive day by day. Let's not forget that if we are silent today, if we don't say against the oppression and injustice that's taking place and aggression that's taking place in Palestine today, they will come for each and every one of us in every corner of this world. It's not such that, okay, it's an injustice taking place in Palestine in a limited land, and it's not going to, you know, reach out to other people in the world. No, it's going to reach out to everyone, to each and every people all around the globe, if we don't put in a stop and an end to it. This is the reality of oppression and oppressors. Oppressors won't stop if you don't stop them, if you don't force them to stop. And we need to retaliate. We need to start those who have the space of writing, they have to write. Those who can speak, they have to speak. Those who can make art, make music, do whatever you can, through whatever possible means that you have, to show the people of the world that this is the reality of this regime that's beautifying the ugly face and that's hiding the ugly face of its reality in telling the people of the world that we have democracy here. The only thing that you don't have in Palestine is democracy. The solution that the leader of the Islamic Revolution offered is that let the people of Palestine, all the Palestinians in the world, those who are living in Palestine, inside Palestine, and those who were forced to leave, those who were expelled, to vote. Let them exercise their choice. Let them vote, regardless of their religion, regardless of anything and everything. Let the Palestinians come and vote and decide for their own countries. If they wanted this system, they can have it. If they wanted to change it, they can change it. And they will definitely change it. They've been fighting against the oppression and aggression of this regime. So the people of the world have to wake up. The people of the world have to get united. Today what we need is a unity against Zionism and imperialism. And this unity is happening. We're getting more and more united, as Mr. Masoud Shajara said, what we see in London today, which is the capital base where everything is started. The support for Israel started from London, from the British government. They supported them. They helped them to establish that oppressor regime. What we see today is that people in the streets of London, despite the fact that they know it's going to be dangerous for them going on the streets and shouting out against the regime of Israel, it will be pricey for them, but they go there. They don't care about if the MI6 or God knows what services, intelligence services, they see them and they take their pictures and they go to their houses and rape them. They go there, they call for justice, they invite the people of the world to see what's happening and taking place in Palestine, in America, and all around the world today. And
I'm going to bring in Mr. Shajar now. Stay with us.
To join.
Sheikh Taib, Mr. Shajar in London. This Al-Quds Day comes at an interesting time as it coincides with the Israeli regime's forceful evictions of Palestinians from their homes in Sheikh Jarrah and East Al-Quds. That's happening as we're speaking right now. How can the Israelis carry on with their land grab and settlement building policies, all of which we know are illegal under international law? Is it the U.S.'s support that has emboldened the Israelis to this point?
Absolutely. I think the fact of the matter is that the support of U.S. and indeed the Western world has made it possible for them to carry on the level of brutality and the level of crime that they are committing, not just right now, but, day in, day out, 7 days a week, 360 days a year. And the fact is that it is up to us, and we know the solution is that the masses need to speak out, because, unfortunately, the leadership of the Western world is not going to sort of intervene. And they haven't intervened in any other injustices that takes place. So I think this is very important that we as a people need to rise up. And I think the significance of the Ayatollah Khamenei's speech today was for two things. One is the destroying this fallacy of civilized democracy in the region. And to destroy that, to stop it, and the solution has to be a solution which is by mobilization of masses and mobilization of ordinary Palestinians, and the way that we will all come together to address this thing. And if we do that, indeed we will see the disappearance of this last apartheid system which exists, and I think once that happens, then everyone in the region and everyone in the occupied territory could actually begin to put their lives back together, and we will see another sort of end of another atrocity, as we saw what happened in South Africa with the end of the apartheid there.
Sheikh Taib, back to you. You mentioned earlier the issue, the importance of unity in the in the Muslim world, controversial stances and policies by some Arab states have made the struggle of the Palestinians much harder now, namely the normalization agreements between some of these Arab states with the Israeli regime. Have the these Arab countries effectively turned their back on the suffering of their Arab brethren?
For everyone, that these so-called leaders are not the real leaders of the Muslim world nor the Arab world. The people today, they know the reality of these so-called leaders. So when we speak of the Muslim world and the leaders of Muslim world, we know that today the people of the Muslim countries, Muslims all around the globe, they've started to realize the reality of these faces that they see on camera here and there, those who speak good but do bad, those who practice differently from what they say. These leaders are puppets of Israel and the United States of America's administration. So the people of the region, Muslims, have realized this. And the only thing that's kept them in power here is their money and the force of their military that they have. So this is the reality of the leaders, and people of this region know it. So when we speak of the support of the Muslim Ummah and the leaders of Muslim Ummah, those who are those who have named themselves the leaders, obviously they don't support Israel, and they try to normalize relationships with Israel and to accept and embrace this new entity in this region. But the people have never accepted the existence of this oppressive regime. Let me tell you something. If the time comes for the final battle between the people of the world, not only the region, the people of the world and the Israeli regime, you see the real unity that's happening today at that time. At that time, you will see people from London, people from America, Washington, D.C., people from Michigan, people from Europe, from France. Everywhere, you see people from Asia, you see people from Africa who will stand up and will go to fight with Israel. This is the reality that will take place.
Very well.
But let me tell you something, we won't get there because the Israel is going down itself because of the divisions that they have, and the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the power of the resistance line in this region will end Israel, and inshallah, will free and liberate Palestine, inshallah.
Okay, sorry for interrupting you there. We are running short of time on tonight's program. Let me thank my guests, founder at the Al-Ghulam Seminary, Mr. Sheikh Mehdi Taub, joining us from Mashhad. Also thanks to head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Shajara, joining us from the British capital, London. Also, special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, assalamu alaikum and welcome to Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In this series of shows, we're trying to answer theological questions that are being asked by different questioners from around the world. Like always, we have invited Sheikh Murtada Karimi, Islamic researcher from Qom Samir Schools, to answer the questions that we pose in this show. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me.
Thank you for accepting the invitation. The question of the day that we want to ask it from you, Sheikh, is about dua and prayers or supplications. It has been asked that what is the reason that our duas are not answered or not actually reached to the point of ijaba? What are the actually obstacles in the prayers that stops them from being answered, Sheikh? This is a question that has been asked during the history by different even followers of different religions. But now, as a Muslim, we have this divine code that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, ask me and I will reply you, I will answer you. So how come that we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for help, we do dua, we do prayers, but at times we see that there is no result and no progress in the prayers that we are reciting and asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? So I want you, dear Sheikh, to shed some light on this question, which is, I think, a quite prevalent question that is being asked by different people, brothers and sisters all around the world. So it would be, I think, nice to hear from Islamic scholar to see what the answer is.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you mentioned, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Noble Book of Quran, A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim, Udu'uni astajib lakum. Supplicate to me, pray to me, and I will answer you. And this verse requires that every prayer must be answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. From one perspective, it can be said that all the prayers are answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in one way or another. But I will come to this later after referring to some obstacles for the prayers to be answered. So according to the narrations that we have received from the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, there are a couple of factors which prevent the prayers from being answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The first one is committing sins. According to the narrations, committing sins might cause the afflictions, and also they prevent the du'as from being answered, they decrease the sustenance of the people, they remove blessing from the life of the people, and so on and so forth. Let me share some narration in this regard.
Shaban, before you go to this narration and continue, I want to ask you a question with what you have just said. I want to ask a question exactly about whatever you have said till now. In the verse of Quran that you mentioned, Ud'uni astajib lakum, there is no condition that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for example, mentions some hindrances and some obstacles here. If the request is actually quite open and there is no condition and there is no qaid in it, so where from are we collecting all these conditions and quyud?
This is a very good point. I have two answers to this valid question. First of all the verses of the Noble Book of Quran should be considered for us to come to a conclusion for each subject. So it is very common in the Quran that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says something in a verse, in a chapter, and then mentions the conditions, the quyud, as you mentioned, the limitations in other verses. So, for example, a verse reads that intercession only belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which requires that no one else has the right to intercede for other people. But other verses tell us that some illa man irtada min rasul, some prophets, for example, they have the right to intercession. Is it a contradiction in the Quran? No. The infallibles, they have taught us to consider all the verses of the Noble Book of Quran to come to a conclusion. So if one verse requires that all the prayers are answered, but another verse or the narrations of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt tell us that there are some conditions, it means that that verse has some conditions and limitations. This is one point.
Very true.
The second answer is that, as I mentioned at the beginning of my answer, from one perspective, all the prayers are answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I wanted to mention that later, but I can answer and explain that now. The point is that, according to some scholars, prayer, dua, in and of itself is an act of worship.
Very
so
true.
For every dua, for every prayer and supplication, we will be rewarded for the dua itself, whether the dua is accepted and answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or not. So I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for sustenance, for example. If I'm given that sustenance, I have also the reward for the dua. If I will not be given, still I have the reward for the dua. On the Day of Judgment, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give so many rewards for the du'as that have not been answered in this world. And it's been mentioned, I believe, in some narrations that they are so great that people wish on the Day of Judgment that they say, I wish none of the prayers were accepted and answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the world. So if you look at the prayer from this perspective, when you supplicate to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if you reach what you ask for, so that was your purpose, and still you will be rewarded for prayer. And if not, you will be rewarded so much by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the Day of Judgment, and you will not regret it for sure. And you may wish that, I mean, none of your prayers were answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So if you look at the prayers from this perspective, we can say that prayer in and of itself is an act of worship, and it is answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, maybe right now or later during our lifetime or in the hereafter by rewarding the people.
So you said that all the prayers are answered. Does it include all, I don't know, good or bad prayers that we are making, supposedly, that I don't know what is the good of this request for me? In case, for example, suppose that I, for example, wish killing of a person, will it be also answered? No, there are some exceptions here.
Of course not. When we say prayer, we know that there are some etiquette for prayers and some conditions about the request that we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's been mentioned in the narrations that, for example, what we are supplicating for should not be something against the Islamic laws. It should not be against the rights of other people, and so on and so forth. So we are talking about a valid prayer, valid dua,
very
and
true.
Supplication. If it is the case, then either Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala answers that, I mean, right now, or I mean, some days from now or later, in our lifetime, or if not, he will reward us for that in the hereafter, because in some cases it is not what we ask for is something halal. For example, I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for increasing my sustenance. It's not forbidden, it's something halal. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows that if I'm given that sustenance, for example, I will be deviated from the right path. So he does not give me what I ask for. Instead of that, on the Day of Judgment, he will make it up for me by giving me so much reward. So we can say that giving that reward is a kind of answering the prayer. If you accept that, then we can say that all the valid prayers are answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But if you regard that reward not as an answer for the prayer, then I go back to my first answer that the verse has some conditions and limitations mentioned in other verses and narrations of the Ahlul
Bayt. So even if they are not going to be answered in this world, they will definitely be answered in the hereafter.
By answer, in this case, I mean receiving so many rewards by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So I don't mean that, for example, if I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for a child, I'm not given a child, then in the hereafter I will be given a child. No.
But it will be compensated by something else.
By so many rewards from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh. Sorry for interruption. You can go back to the narration that you wanted to say.
So committing sin is a very great obstacle for the prayers to be answered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, according to this narration, sometimes a believer asks me for something and I fulfill his request. But then he will commit some sins. And I tell the angels that through committing sins, he has removed himself from my mercy. And that is why I'm not going to answer his prayer until or unless he goes back to my servitude. Imam Hadi alayhi salam says explicitly that committing sin is an obstacle for the acceptance of the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Another narration reads, it's very surprising of the people who ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the prayer, and they consider and they think that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala